Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Joining us on the line now is Ella Risbridger. She's a writer and journalist whose best-selling debut, Midnight Chicken, won Cookbook of the Year at the Guild of Food Writers Awards and was named Book of the Year in multiple publications. Her new book, The Kitchen Book, is your source of wisdom for the 4 p.m. What's for Dinner panic and the definitive answer to maybe just toast and an early night. It's cooking for real life with the kinds of recipes you will actually make and actually love. Welcome to the show, Ella.
Hi, Hannah. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you for joining us. So what inspired this book then? What made you want to write The Kitchen Book?
So quite honestly, I'd written two previous cookbooks and I decided not to write any more. Actually, because I thought, you know, they were quite difficult to do. I'm quite lazy. And I found I couldn't stop cooking. And I found that I was still writing down these recipes and I was... still, and I kind of looked down at this folder and I thought, oh no, I've done a cookbook. And what was different about this cookbook and what has made this cookbook, I think that has made this cookbook really resonate with people is that these are the things that I'm really cooking. You know, these are the recipes that I make on repeat and always have done for years now. I love these recipes. I really do. They're not made up to fill pages in a cookbook. They're not developed. They're not put through a kind of, you know, a machine to make recipes, to make a book. They're the recipes that I think are really delicious and that my friends and family love and that I love. And I hope that they will do that for anyone who reads the book.
Yeah, nice. So they're all things that when you're cooking then, do you make it up as you go along? Do you see what ingredients you've got and put it all together and then go, oh, that was nice, and write it down?
Yeah, sort of, in the first instance. You know, there's kind of, I guess there's two ways in. So it's kind of way number one, which is, you know, it's Tuesday. You think we've got to have something and I've got half a slightly decaying cabbage and I've got some bread and I've got some, and you think, right, what can I do with these things to make them surprising and delicious and kind of useful? And then there's the way where I'll kind of lie in bed and I'll think it would be really cool if you could make a kind of lemon curd frangipane, and it would be really cool if you could make sure that those yolks and whites, you know, you use the egg whites to make the cake and the yolks to make the curd, it would be really cool if that could balance out and you wouldn't waste it. So sometimes I have like a dream and sometimes I have a kind of basic necessity to make dinner for myself and the people around me.
Yeah, I love it. I want to ask you about some of the recipes in the book, some of the...
I'd love to talk about them.
So what's no knife potato curry about?
My friend has two small children, both under four, and he and his wife both work full time, as most people do. And I remember him telling me that for him, the most important thing in a recipe is knifelessness. He doesn't want to have to get out a chopping board, cut things up, wash them up before the kids get home. He says he's got, you know, 15 minutes to half an hour between finishing work and picking up the kids. And he said to me that he wanted recipes that he could cook in that 15 to 25 minutes without having to, with the minimum of stuff. And it really resonated with me because I hate washing up. I hope that enough people will buy this book that I can afford to have a dishwasher put in. So if you're listening, please think of how much I hate washing up. I hate washing up and I love food. So for me, the idea of knifelessness was really important. Just because that takes out so many steps of faff. I find that often with recipes, they're written in this way that so it will say, you know, start with 210 grams of chopped red onion. And for me, that's the most complicated part of cooking is thinking, right, do we have a red onion? No, we've got a white onion. It's gone a bit brown on the top. Someone put it in the wrong bowl. No, now I've looked in the bowl with the onions in. There's a bit of mold there. So now I need to take that out, wash up the bowl, put it back, find somewhere else for the garlic to go. Will the white onion do? Then you've got to chop it. And so how finely is finely? And by the time you've started that, what looked like quite a quick recipe on paper is actually, you know, you're 35 minutes in and you've not even begun.
Yeah.
And so I guess part of it was trying to make a book that acknowledged the ways people really live, that wasn't assuming that you've got someone else to do your prep work for you or that you know, that you've got extra time that's not accounted for in the recipe.
Mm.
I think I'm also quite a slow cook. You know, I don't like being rushed. I don't like being rushed on anything. And so I wanted to kind of cut as many corners in the actual process of cooking so that you can really enjoy what is there and what remains. I wanted to strip it back to the essentials. You know, if you've read the book, you'll know that quite often I'll say, you'll want to skip this step, but please don't.
Right.
Because I'm writing, I guess, to an audience of people who I assume are kind of like myself, which is to say smart people and people who are pretty confident, and people are like, oh, well, that doesn't look that necessary. Saying, no, it is necessary. So I wanted to meet people where they were, and the idea of knifelessness really kind of keyed into that. You know, I think that curry came from several places in my mind. My friend Kate Young wrote a really good book called Dinner at Mine that has this cherry tomato curry, and it's truly wonderful. So I guess I was thinking about using whole cherry tomatoes. And then once you've thought of whole cherry tomatoes, you think, what about potatoes, little tiny ones that you don't have to chop? And then prawns are such a quick win.
Yes. I was going to say, how do you get potatoes in without chopping them? But they're baby potatoes, so that makes sense.
Little tiny ones, yeah, the smallest you can get.
Yeah, nice. And what about onions? Don't you need onions in a curry, which presumably need to be chopped?
I actually, for that one, just use quite a lot of garlic and ginger paste from the Indian supermarket.
Okay, fair enough.
You just make a kind of base, lots of spices, and it works really well. It works really well. You know, I really recommend that anyone who loves to cook and is listening to this, go and buy a couple of tubes of ginger and garlic pastes, because it saves, you know, it both saves time and it is doing something new, in the same way that tomato puree isn't the same thing as a fresh tomato.
Yeah.
But most cooks will have both.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah. Ingredient you might not have come across.
Yes, no, absolutely.
Or
I love
an old
it.
Ingredient in a new form.
Yeah, yeah. There's a couple of words that I haven't heard of in different recipes, which I want to ask you what they are. Marinated bavette. What's bavette?
Bavette is, now, listen, there will be lots of your listeners, I'm sure, who are, I was going to say meatheads, but that sounds incredibly rude, who are into meat. As my knowledge of bavette is that it's a slightly cheaper, very delicious cut of steak.
Okay.
Now, please don't ask me where on the cow it comes from. That is not my area of expertise. When I buy meat, I go into the butcher and I say, please, will you give me the meat that will look nice? So, you know, but bavette, it's a particular cut of steak.
Okay.
It's often a little bit cheaper and it's really delicious.
Oh, nice. Okay. What about one bowl cannellis? What's a cannelli?
A cannelli is a kind of little delicious cake from the south of France, mid-France. Not entirely sure. I haven't got a map of France.
Is fine.
It's a little French cake that's essentially a kind of baked custardy business, and you cook it so that it burns, almost burns on the outside, and the sugar kind of blackens. So it's very crisp on the outside and very tender on the inside. Very tender, very moist, very golden. They are so delicious. They are so good. And they also, if you're not in France, I don't know where you guys are based, but if you're not in France, they cost about £4.50 at artisan bakeries for a very teeny tiny one about the size of a thumb. So learning to make them at home is a real game changer.
Yeah.
And has been for me anyway.
Oh, amazing. And I wanted to ask you about breakfast bars, because breakfast bars have had a lot of bad press over the last few years in terms of them not being as healthy as we'd like to think they are. So I'm interested to know on the ingredients that you've put into your breakfast bars.
I actually love these breakfast bars. I think they're pretty good, you know. They're mostly oats, nuts, dried fruit. Do they have condensed coconut milk in? Yes, they do. But is that probably fine? Sure. You know, you've got to have some sugar. You know, it's nice to have a bit of sugar, nice to have a bit of fat to start the day. And I think that condensed coconut milk is one of life's great joys. I mean, condensed milk generally, you know, that thing that you kind of dip your finger in the tin. What a treat. Condensed coconut milk, if you've not come across it, is like that, but coconutty. I think the breakfast bars are pretty healthy. They've got oat bran. There's nothing. I actually really started making them. This is such a boring topic to get into on the radio, and I'm not going to get in depth in it, but the sort of UPF thing, my partner is a breakfast bar person, and I was very like, maybe we'll buy less stuff in packets. And so I kind of got into making these as a way to have that feeling of convenience without necessarily buying things that might, as you say, have ingredients in that surprise us or aren't as healthy as we think.
Yeah, definitely. No, good for you. We're in Spain, southern Spain, and sometimes you can't get ingredients as readily as you might be able to in the UK. And I have to admit, I've never seen or heard of condensed coconut milk before, which is really annoying because this sounds great.
I have to say, I buy it on the internet. I've never seen it in the shop.
Oh, good to know. Okay.
I buy it in a shop because I try to limit my dairy, which is, you know, an interesting thing about this book is that, you know, I'm writing it as a person who doesn't eat that much dairy. I don't eat like a ton of meat. So I hope it's pretty accessible for lots of people. But yeah, so I buy it on the internet and I found it by thinking you must be able to get condensed coconut milk. I'm Googling where buy condensed coconut milk.
Yes, I'm going to write that down. Condensed coconut milk, because that sounds fab.
It's unbelievably delicious.
Yeah, I bet. There's also some... Oh, no, I wanted to ask you about this one. I'm totally into Korean, like crispy Korean... I normally have crispy Korean chicken, but you've got a recipe for sticky crispy Korean tofu, which sounds delicious.
I mean, I don't know how... I suspect it's not very authentically Korean, but it does have a kind of Korean styling in that it uses gochujang as a base.
Yeah.
I mean, I truly recommend you go home and make it right away. It's so good. I mean, people are funny about tofu, but I think this is quite a good way in for people who aren't mad keen on tofu, because you can't eat it and not love it. It's the tofu gets pressed flat to get all the water out, crumbled into a big bowl with some corn flour to make it crispy, and then fried off. And then once it's crispy, you pour over a sauce made of gochujang, to the Korean kind of chili sauce, some vinegar, some sugar, some garlic and ginger. And it just makes this kind of like, it has everything you want from a takeaway, but you've made it at home. And then I tend to serve that with some burnt green beans. Because the thing is, if you burn some green beans, they'll soak up a dressing really well.
Okay.
Which is such an amazing trick. I remember a friend of mine, John Gallagher, writing about this, and he said that when you burn beans and put a dressing on them, it's like when you've got a sunburn on your skin and you put aloe vera on it and it just feels like it's drinking it all up.
Yes. Interesting. So, yes, we love gochujang in our house. I'm very lucky. My husband's the cook and he puts that in a lot of things that wouldn't normally be spicy. I'm like, oh, this has got a bit of a kick to it. He's like, because I put gochujang in it.
It's a really great way to get flavor very quickly because it's got that fermented thing. So it's got that kind of dark, salty punchiness to it, but it's also got that like high, bright chili.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the sound of pumpkin and raisin roasted rice as well. Roasted rice, what's that?
I mean, it's hard to think about anything that means you need to put the oven on today because it's quite warm. I imagine it's quite warm in Spain as well. on the south coast of England, it's pretty toasty. But I do recommend that your listeners hear this and think about this again in, say, September. Roasted rice, it's kind of like a drier risotto, but it doesn't require you to do any stirring and a very minimal work.
Okay.
So you're putting arborio rice with some crispy sage, some roasted pumpkin, and then some little bits of goat cheese if you want. And you're just putting that in the oven with some herbs and some stock. And you're just baking that until it is all done, until the rice is fluffy and it's formed like a kind of crispy crust on the top and on the bottom. It's so good. I mean, at this point, it's been several months since I dared turn the oven on, but... You know, I can't wait to eat it again once we're back in a jumpers season.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. And I love the sound of miso mushroom ragu as well. Mushrooms are like my favourite thing ever in the world. So this, it really excites
me. Well, let me tell you, if you want to eat a lot of mushrooms, have I got the recipe for you. Yeah, I started making that at New Year. So we traditionally have a big New Year's party. And one year I was like, what are we going to do? We've got more vegetarians coming than meat eaters. I just thought, well, I bet I could make a really delicious ragu with mushrooms. The secret to that, not to give away all the secrets, because please, again, do buy my book, is to use mushrooms in different, kind of lean into their different textures. So, you know, some mushrooms you chop up very small and use that as the kind of mince that you'd put in a, you know, if you're making a sort of like a bolognese, you might have the mince portion. But you also, if you're making a big beef ragu in the trad Italian way, you might have something like shin or brisket, something that kind of falls apart. So what you do is you're using the mushrooms as a kind of delicious base note. And then also you're using that beautiful mushroomy texture just to make it a bit more interesting. And of course, you've got once again that miso, which is another fermented, rich, dark, sort of salty paste.
Yeah, love it.
A lot of shortcuts, I think, is what I'm always looking for. I'm always looking for the best possible shortcut to a big flavour.
Yeah. No, I love that. Something which made me smile as well, because I feel like we might have had something similar here in the super. This isn't something we would normally buy, but we only buy it for the fish taco purpose. You can get in the supermarket here in Spain fillets of fish that have already got the batter, if you like, the coating around it, and you just need to cook it. So we get them every so often, chuck it in the air fryer and have fish tacos. And you've got a recipe for fish finger and smoked sweet corn tacos. I was like, oh, that sounds amazing.
See, I love that recipe. Is one of my absolute favorites because it's so much more than the sum of its parts. You know, I think most, you obviously can get the nice fish already in the batter. Me, I walk to the corner shop and I buy fish fingers. But fish fingers I tend to have in the freezer. A tin of sweet corn I tend to have. And I feel like it's a very fun way to jazz up things, to make corner shop ingredients feel really luxurious and special. And I guess I'm kind of all about that. I'm kind of about trying to make everyday moments feel special without ever being complicated or fussy or overthought.
Yeah, perfect. I also love that you've got a few kind of lists in the book with a bit of advice for people if they want it. Things like how to stock the fridge and how to stock the freezer. Are there particular ways that work better than others then?
Sort of individual preference. I love having a full fridge and a full freezer. I love having a full pantry generally. I say that like I've got a pantry. I love having a full kitchen cupboard. are there ways that are better than others? No, the way everyone does it is, you know, most people will have their own sort of list. What I love about that is I could ask lots of people, what do you keep in your freezer? And that everyone would say, oh, you must have this or you must have that. And you get lots of different answers. I try to be quite clear in the book, like, this is my way of doing it. It's not necessarily the best way. It's certainly not the only way, but it's my way. And maybe that's helpful to you.
Mm. So what do you have in your freezer?
Right now, quite a lot of ice cream. Parathas, they're like the little Indian flatbreads. They're like a naan, but you scrunch them up and they're full of butter and they're so delicious. I love them. What else is in my freezer? I'm sorry to say, quite a lot of chicken bones because I use them to make stock, but I wait until anytime we have a roast chicken, bones in the freezer, ready for me to get round to making stock.
Mm-hmm. And how long would stock last? If you made a chicken stock and put it in the fridge, how long would you have till you have to use it by?
Listen, I'm extremely loath to give any food hygiene advice on the radio. What if someone listens and then does what I say and sues me? I probably use it in the next couple of days, but it freezes beautifully stock. So, my friend Kate, the one I mentioned earlier, who has the amazing cherry tomato curry, she freezes it in Ziploc bags from IKEA.
Yeah.
And she just then can break off a piece when she needs it for something special.
Yeah. No, that's a really good idea. And also, one other recipe that I wanted to mention, because I love the sound of these, asparagus fritters.
Oh, they're gorgeous. The tempura, it's like a tempura asparagus. Now, I'm a real deep frying refuse, Nick. I find it really spooky. However, you can do this in a big frying pan as long as you've got a spatter guard and you don't have to get the oil too high up the pan.
Okay.
And that makes me feel much, much more safe. But they are really delicious. And the batter's so simple as well. It's simply flour and sparkling water and a little pinch of salt. And you just whisk it together with some chopsticks, dip the asparagus and just throw it straight into some hot oil.
Okay.
And it's just delicious. It makes a kind of cloud-like batter. It's almost that kind of Japanesey, super floaty, really crisp. It's delicious and it's really easy.
Oh,
and I think, as I say, I'm always trying to find ways to make things feel special without too much extra trouble.
Yeah, I love it. Well, I love the sound of your book so much. I'm going to get it for my husband because it's his birthday in a couple of weeks, and this will be right up his street. Definitely, this is exactly true. What you say in the advertisement, saying that it's full of recipes, the kind that you will actually make and actually love, and I believe you.
Well, I hope you and your husband enjoy them all. I hope you make them all and tell me about it.
Yes,
and I
definitely
hope your listeners are also hungry.
Yes, I'm definitely hungry after chatting. So if people want to get a copy of the kitchen book, it's available on our website, tre.radio, and it's by Ella Risbridger, who we've been chatting with today. Ella, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.